When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Pressure than hoe, riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking, yeah. Can't none of y'all mirror me back. You hear me rap, it's like Angie rapping his prime. I'm Young H.O., rap's Grateful Dead. Back to take over the globe.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is 11:47 on a Saturday night, and I am one half of your undercover partnership, Blake Howard. This, of course, is the show Miami Nice. The horniest modern man campfire you could imagine. The vibes are good here. The vibes have never been better. Katie Walsh is my partner in crime. Katie, how are you?
The vibes are impeccable. I'm loving it.
The vibes are impeccable. And just when you know, so important in Miami Vice is supporting characters. So Katie and I have kind of cast ourselves as the Crockett and Tubbs of the Miami Nice universe. But just sitting over here, crushing it with an entire huge fandom of himself, is the Justin Theroux of our universe. Just a guy sitting there watching a TV, bitching about Marlon's highlights, being an absolute stone cold legend. Everyone's eyes looking over going like, who's that guy? I love that guy. Yeah. I love how he uses a tourniquet on his legs in a gunfight. That is how we feel today. We don't actually feel like this is a guest. We feel like this is someone who's secretly been on the show that just no one's been talking to because they've been a supporting character. But they're not just a supporting character. They're an amazing creative and someone who actually broadly gives me hope about YouTube and film criticism, because there's kind of no one else. Like, there's no one else. You're going to listen to me put that drop in. That is no one else. Is there no one else? That's the drop you're about to hear right now.
Is there no one else? Is there no one else?
This man and his incredible team and partnership of writers and co-writers produce easily the best, consistently the best film criticism that is available on YouTube in video essay form and on Nebula, where you can get all the extended stuff. It is, of course, Patrick H. Willems. And man, thank you so much for being a part of Miami Nice. We had a convergence of ideas. Katie inspired the Choose Vibes Train Spotting speech. And then, as if the universe was putting us together to play, you did the incredible Tenet and the Celebration of Vibes movies. And we were just like, this has to happen now. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. We're huge fans.
Thank you. So it is a pleasure and an honor to be here among like-minded people. I'm so happy to be here. This is great.
Yay. Yeah. When I saw the Vibes video go out, I like immediately DM'd Blake and was like, watch this right now. Like, this could not be more urgent for us to, you know, converge the meeting of the minds for this one.
The timing is amazing. Since you guys were, you know, on the Vibes train as it was. I mean, obviously, like, if you have a Miami Vice podcast, you're already all about vibes. But because, like, I've been, this is a video that I've been, like, thinking about making for, like, 2 years. And I was like, hey, I finally got around to it. And it's like there was something, you know, in the air. Yeah. Or more probably in the water in our yeah. mojitos and that like it you know, we're all on the same page at the same time, and I love it.
No, I have to wonder if like it's a reaction. I feel like it's, for me, the embrace of vibes and the celebration of vibes is like it's a reaction to like the sort of MCU-ification of everything, where everybody's just obsessed with like plot and Easter eggs and cameos and how things link together. And I'm just like, I hate trying to follow all that stuff and having to watch every single series and every single movie to like know what's going on. Like, I just want to experience like location shooting and costumes and lighting and like real stuff that's happening in front of me cinematically and world building. Like, that's not, you know, multiverse world building on a, you know, CGI stage. I think for me, it's a reaction to like what's happening in mainstream culture, cinematic culture.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, like, not to be like, you know, not to come on the show and be like, let's dunk on Marvel movies altogether.
That's okay.
You know, there's like, I know, but like, you know, there's it's a thing, like, It's such an easy thing and such like a popular thing, but like, and not to just blame one franchise for it, but like I touched on it in the video a little bit, but it's just like, I feel like in so many ways the last like 20 years of just, especially like large scale, like, you know, blockbuster franchise filmmaking has kind of trained us to like focus on plot and plot details and, you know, and lore and logic and all those things. And especially just like, you know, coming from the realm of film YouTube, which is, you know, there's like, you know, there are other people there who do, I think, great work, but so much of film YouTube is are bad videos by people with bad takes that are mostly just focused on like plot. I mean, like, I will say I've been, you know, fighting the anti-plot fight for several years. I like back when I was a younger man in the days of 2018, and I was ready to like stir shit up. I think I'd only been actually like making a living on YouTube for like a year or so I was still like, ooh, it's like a new thing if people pay attention to me, and I'm just gonna like start conflicts and say controversial things. And I made a video called Shut Up About Plot Holes because I was really tired of all the videos about like, you know, how like plot holes are the biggest problems with movies. And I made the video way more confrontational than I would nowadays. And but I was like really like worked up about that back then. And now I feel like this new video, the vibes video, is like my older, slightly more chill version of this similar argument, which is just like, look, if you want to care about, you know, like plot details above all else, go for it. That's fine if you want to, but I kind of think there's other stuff that's maybe more valuable.
Yeah,
it's a much wiser take, and it obviously, you know, it's the world that you're in, so I can understand the confrontational. And I won't dunk on Marvel here, but I'll just like I'm just recalling as we're talking about it, it's always been the conflict for me between folks who are like really love TV and folk who love movies. Just in my personal experience, like, I had a friend, just like a workmate, who was like, oh, you're a DC comic books fan, you like the Batman movies, the Nolan Batman movies and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, big fan, Batman fan, ride or die. It's like, have you watched the Flash TV show? And I said, oh no, I've kind of missed it. In Australia, for whatever reason, it wasn't on a network that was readily accessible. Most people were buying it on DVD at the time. And he's like, oh, it's great, it's got some cool stuff in there. And I'm like, oh, how many seasons is it? And he goes, oh, there's 5 out right now. So this is a long time ago, obviously. And I go, 5, okay. How many minutes is every episode? He's like, oh, it's 40. And I go, how long are the seasons? He goes, 24 episodes. I go, no, absolutely not. Like 100% no. I go, just do the math. How many movies could I watch? I love movies. I'm a cinephile. Do you know that there's whole countries that I just haven't ever explored? Do you know how many of their stone cold classics, you know, we're going to talk about your visor, but like Patrick and his team just did an unbelievable, like immersive embedding into Bollywood culture. And actually the specificities, and in Australia, we have a huge Indian population, like a huge South Asian diaspora all over. So it was like one of the first times I'd seen someone really deep dive into the culture and the industry, like, and just one specific segment of that culture. I could watch all those movies and then a whole others. And I'm not even in Flash season 3 yet. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Who has the amount of time? I'm sorry. It's just not what I want. Whereas then you get one morsel of like 2 hours and 20 minutes of like a deeply vibey movie, like a Miami Vice, like a Tenet, like a Black Hat, for example. Also big, big vibes. And the other thing Patrick reminded me of is like, you, I know you're a huge Mission Impossible fan. We here are huge Mission fans, Tom Cruise fans, obviously. Shout out to the Light the Fuse podcast boys.
I think that's how I first became aware of you guys.
Through
Light the Fuse.
Yeah. Nice. So love the boys on Light the Fuse. And that's the other thing. Another one of my mates, not a big movie fan. We saw Bullet Train together, Patrick. And I was like, huh? And he's like, I love that. That was great. And I go, no, you didn't. It was no. And I said, come back to my house come back to my house right now. We're watching Mission Impossible Fallout. And he's like, isn't that the six? Do I need to watch any of the others? I said, no, you don't. You need to sit down and you need to watch this movie. And this is an action movie. And then you can leave. And so that's the, like, I don't know how to explain that to other people. So like, other than being so hyper aware of time and like art really inspiring, challenging me, moving me, titillating me, whatever it is. And I can't watch. I'm sorry. There's like 20 seasons of The Flash now. I'm sorry. Flash fans.
Well, isn't it ending this week?
Yeah. That's reminded me. I saw on Instagram. Someone was like tweeting about The Flash and whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. I will say I watched The Flash when it came out, and I think I watched the first two seasons, and then I never actually like said I'm gonna stop watching. I just fell behind because I got busy, and then before I knew it there was like 60 hours of television that I was behind on. I'm just like, nope,
it's never gonna happen. Yeah, no, life's too short.
life's
too short, choose vibes.
Yes.
So your incredible video, obviously, like you said, it's a wiser take. You've moved on from this.
I'm not picking fights anymore.
Yes, no. And who cares? Yeah.
But also, like, the wiser way to do it is, I think, exactly the way you did it, which is, like, instead of being like, I'm mad at you, plot hole scolds, you're saying, I'm arguing in support of this other thing instead of attacking the other thing. It's like, no, let me explain to you, like, what the vibes ethos is and present it as an alternative, which I think is the mature grown-up 2023 way to do it.
Exactly. It's definitely, you know, how long has it been? Four and a half years. Yeah. I will say I did realize, like, very quickly after making a video that was kind of like confrontational and kind of like stirred up shit on YouTube and had like people with much bigger audiences than me like making response videos, I was just like, oh, this is, I'm stressed out now. Yeah. I don't want to have feuds. Never mind. It's just, again, life's too short to have online feuds. And I would rather just hang out here, you know, and vibe with movies I like. And if people want to join, then, you know, like, look, I think our numbers are going to keep growing. Like,
you're a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, we're all going to assemble.
He got his tan in Mumbai, you know?
Right. Yeah. My tan was, I got to say, guys, speaking of the Mumbai trip, I am so proud that I went that whole trip. We were there for a little over 2 weeks. and I did not get sunburned.
It's a miracle.
I don't tan. I'm right. Like, no, I can't. That does not happen to me.
Patrick, my mother's side of the family's Maltese, right? So European, very tan, bronze skin. And then my dad's family dyed in the wool, Irish. And so my skin does this. It's like a couple of days. It's like, oh, you're Maltese. And then it finds the Irish. And then I am as red as this beanie that I'm wearing right now. It's just
and
just
so. Skunking. And like my thought of that is like my mother is literally from Ireland, and yes. And so we're not made for that. We are pale people who we're like vampires if we like catch on fire in direct sunlight. Yeah. So I traveled to India and I brought 3 bottles of sunscreen with me, and then bought more while I was there. But I got through it all with no tan. Part of again. What's fun about watching Miami Vice is being like, yeah, I don't really want to be in the location where those people are because I would be sunburned and so sweaty, but they look cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Colin Farrell, famous Irishman, he thriving is in Miami.
It's miraculous.
How does he do it? Like, you would not guess that's a man from Dublin.
I know.
As he's walking around there, you know, with his like, you know, flowing greasy hair and like his, you know, shirt unbuttoned like halfway down his chest. I'm like, our people aren't made for that.
Yeah, he's like a superhero of some kind. Yeah, I mean, you know, in Miami.
That's the thing. Well, look, you're like, Colin Farrell is like, you know, he's a national treasure. He's one of the great heroes of Ireland. And if I ever meet him, that is what I'm going to ask him about, how he handled Miami.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what we've discovered on this show, and if there's any episode, Patrick, unlike The Flash, we're not going to make you go back and listen to all of our episodes, but I would say there is a terrific episode with the beautiful Yaphet, who was Colin Farrell's personal assistant on the set of Miami Vice. Yeah. And I think we titled the previous episode or maybe that episode, Colin's Not Here, because he was on another planet. He doesn't remember it.
That's one of our guiding mantras of the show is that in that performance, Colin's not here.
Yeah.
Colin's Sunny not here. Only. Sunny has possessed his body.
I mean, hasn't he said he has basically no memory of None. Shooting the
That's
movie?
That's what he claims. Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I mean, Yaphet remembers.
Okay, I have to listen to this because I am so, I mean, we all are, but so fascinated by the production of that movie, which sounded stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some pretty big egos, you know.
Big egos, a lot of money, dangerous locations, hurricanes, and drugs.
Right. and if you're first listener, this is the first time you've listened to Miami Nice, welcome. And you may be listening because of Patrick, but just to give you a little hint, Yaphet, without revealing the names, someone in the production of Miami Vice gets off a plane. He's waiting at the airport to collect them. At that stage, he's not Colin Farrell's assistant. He's simply just a runner on the movie and doing different things. And immediately as they get off the plane, where's the cocaine, right? So this is another time Colin Farrell purchases a VIP section of a very famous Miami night spot to go and hang out one night. And then the next night, Jamie Foxx rents the club. That sort of
the like back and
measuring,
forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dick measuring. They were like, I'd rent a Corvette, he'd rent a Lamborghini. Like it was very a lot of competition going
and,
on.
And in that particular episode, Patrick, knowing how much you love Vibes movies, we heard that the way that Colin Farrell and Gong Li built their relationship is that they went to said Miami nightclub, sat together and drank red wine on a couch in a VIP section and just hugged each other with Gong Li's translator. And basically fell in love. And I was like, I would give anything to sit with that translator. I would give anything to sit there.
That is incredible. Well, because, I mean, you know, you two are the experts on this movie. And I think how good was Gong Li's English when they made that movie? Is it an entirely like phonetic performance?
Complete phonetic performance. Cannot speak. Barely speak English.
Right.
Yeah, like first line, she was practicing over and over again, and I think it's like a very simple line, you know, like put your guns on the table or something.
Yeah.
And she was just practicing over and over just this one line just to get it. So yeah, she and Colin were communicating telepathically, physically, emotionally.
Talk more about that, Katie. Talk more about that.
I mean, this is the rare kind of movie where that works in favor of the movie and is not like other movies that it wouldn't really work in the same way.
No.
But I don't feel like anyone would ever do that again. Like there's no movie that will be made the way Miami Vice was made.
No, it's a shame.
No. I remember, I mean, you've talked to Michael Mann before, right?
Yeah.
Blake has.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was on One Heat Minute.
He closed the show.
Right. And I remember what a big deal that was when it's like, oh shit, they got him at the end.
They got the man.
Got him.
So I got the man. I have never met Michael Mann, but a couple years ago at a wedding, I met a guy who had worked, I believe, as a VFX intern on Black Hat in post-production. And I was just like, tell me every single story you have about Michael Mann. And then he just told me every story he had about being in the office just for months with Michael Mann. And just everything about the way the guy makes movies and the way he edits movies sounds so interesting.
Yeah. The big one, Elliot Koretz, who's been his sound designer. Elliot Koretz, an amazing sound designer with an incredible career, who's a frequent guest on this show, who we met doing a screening of Miami Vice with our patrons, the Miami Nice Cut, we call it. Patrick, we'll get to that momentarily. But he talks about, I've never seen a man, he's in the office by 6 o'clock in the morning. Usually they have a production office that has everything together. So you've got editing, you've got sound, obviously, all of the design stuff. His entire post-production office is there. And when he's in that office in both pre and then post-production, he's there at 6 a.m. and he doesn't leave until at the earliest midnight. He's there before everyone else and he's there until everyone has left. And he's like, and that happens for 2 months.
Yeah.
So the guy's running on 4 hours sleep and he's just walking from station to station, editing bay to editing bay, sound to sound, whatever the case may be, walking around. Got active sound designers and sound engineers that are on set recording on set sounds to do comparisons and contrasts and getting people accelerating into that back half of the film. It's just, he sounds like the hardest, like the thing is he's a hard taskmaster, but the hardest working hard taskmaster that there is. And so it's
right.
It's fascinating to think about him as an entity. And it was like the other day, there was a big controversy, and this will sort of orient people for where, when we're talking, there's a controversy. It's like Michael Mann's crossing the picket line at the strike. And I kept going, guys, he's on the Fox lot doing the last sound mix, which we learned from our last guest, Elliot Koretz, who was like, I saw him on the Fox lot. He's doing the last sound mix on Ferrari. And I'm like, he's not crossing the line to work for Fox, guys. He's editing Ferraris. The movie was written 20 years ago. Like, leave him alone. Michael Mann, right. Fight David Zaslav. He's not your enemy.
I know.
Not your enemy. Like, I'm WGA strong, but like, he's not your enemy. He's doing a sound mix. He's 80.
Right.
Let him cross the line. If we don't get Ferrari, I'm coming to there. I'm going to beat up you guys at the picket line. I'm sorry. Right. I love you.
And then we need the Heat 2 movie.
Yes. Yes.
We need Heat 2. Yes.
I was a little late, but I read the book back in January, and I mean, I loved that book so much, but
all
like,
vibes, all vibes,
all vibes. And I'm like, look, if it's just a book, incredible. Loved it. Had such a good time. But the whole time I'm reading it, I'm just picturing like, oh, this would be like the greatest movie of all time. I would give anything to see it.
Yeah.
We're right there with you. So let's dive into, we have gushed pretty heavily about Miami Vice, and this is the show that we're going to talk about it. But we have recently been asking some of our guests, and normally we would, like, go, hey, let's talk about double features, but with Miami Vice. And so we've had some great suggestions and all very, very super vibey movies. One of my favorites so far has been Spring Breakers, as far as a vibey movie.
That makes perfect sense.
Perfect sense, right? So we've had some good ones. Katie's talked about Scarface because Katie is one of the world's greatest Scarface fans. I was like a prophet. I was like, I like undercover going to hell and also the feelings of a city or a town. So it's like, oh, that's a very French, like it's a totally different series of events. But your, I guess, inciting incident of this latest vibes celebration was Tenet. And that's a movie that, like, it's so funny to be cresting a wave of a movie, whereas, like, at the time, for Miami Vice, I was like right on the front line. I was the guy that was walking out, you know, I was like the equivalent of the guy who does the Tenet hand signs as you do in your video. And like people like do the Tenet hand signs, like, yeah, this is us. But I wasn't on the Tenet train. So, but to credit your great work, you and your team and Siddharth, to credit that, like Tenet was the thing that unlocked it. And then through Tenet, you go to the Mission Impossibles, and through Tenet, you go to Bond, and through Tenet, you go to Miami Vice. And so can you, I'd love to talk a little bit about, like, especially because you've had to think about them in an entangled way. Can you talk a little bit about like Tenet and its relationship to Miami Vice for you? And was like Miami Vice a way to look at Tenet for you? I'm just interested because I hadn't put those pieces necessarily together myself. So I'd love to hear you talk about it.
Of course. So actually I thought this would come up. And so I pulled up just like while we were talking, the origin of this, because I didn't see Tenet in theaters when it came out, because when it came out, it was like near the height of the pandemic here.
Yeah, I'm like, no one saw it in theaters.
Well, Australia was the only country that we were actually allowed out. Like the pandemic had dipped and we'd opened up at the time. Right. And I was just telling Katie, I saw six movies in like two weekends. 2001: A Space Odyssey, right? 70 God. Mil. A double feature of Jurassic Park and Jaws, Predator in 4K, Heat in 4K, and then Tenet. And when I watched Tenet, and this is not, I'm sorry to say this, at the time I was like, it's fine. Because I'd kind of seen five of the best movies ever made on the biggest, beautiful, most beautiful Art Deco screen, the Hayden Orpheum in Sydney. It's a gorgeous theater. And so I was just like on cloud nine and I saw Tenet. And I was like, it's fine. And and speaking of confrontational, I walked out of the theater, Patrick, and I was telling Katie, this is my most controversial tweet ever. I was like, Tenet is Nolan's Black Hat. And lots of people were mad. There were so many people who were mad, Patrick.
So, okay. By the way, before we dive into this, I need to just get this out there because I feel guilty. I haven't seen Black Hat.
That's okay. It's okay.
Wait for the new release.
That's and what I'm watch, doing.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I
could not recommend waiting for it more.
Or this, as we've been told, Black Hat, much like The Keep you should watch only on VHS. And Black Hat, I kind of am going to miss that you could just go and watch the Swen cut. Our friend of the show, Ryan Swen, did the FX director's cut, like he reassembled it and used some of the crappy footage and used a really good version of Black Hat to just incorporate the two, because it was never available outside of that FX ecosystem. And so Ryan Swen, go get his cut. It's you know, that's our Hacker cut and Ryan Swen cut, which we've done the same thing, is basically that. Like, that's the best way to view it. It is the superior version by
far. If you DM someone on Twitter and get a file, it's like, yeah, it's very, it's an immersive theater experience where you're like, you know, getting some like cobbled together better cut version of it rather than popping in a nice shiny 4K. You really feel like you're Hathaway when you're doing that.
I mean, it's funny because actually The Keep is the other Michael Mann movie I haven't seen.
Yeah. And you,
yeah, you have to find it on a VHS tape.
On
in
a VHS.
Shed.
Yeah.
That sounds right. It was a thing where like, I didn't see The Keep because for a long time, everyone's just like, yeah, that's the bad one. You can skip it. And it's still a thing that I intended to get to. And then Black Hat, it's just like when it came out at the time, like, you know, obviously like no one saw it in theaters because it like, you know,
they
bombed,
canceled
like,
its theatrical run in Australia. They basically canceled its theatrical run.
But like when it came out, the response was so negative that I was just like, oh well, I guess I won't go see it. I will say, I was at the San Diego Comic-Con panel where Chris Hemsworth showed the Black Hat trailer.
Nice.
In 2014, so I was there for that. But yeah, that, and then Black Cat came out, and then, you know, its group of defenders started to, like, form. And then it got to the point where I was like, oh, I want to see it. But apparently the best version of the movie I can't see anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, it's, I mean, the Swen cut sounds like, I mean, like, I know it's apparently, like, the FX one that you just can't get a hold of. So I got to see this, and I have been waiting for, like, the new upcoming release.
Yeah.
But I just want to put it out there that, like, sorry, I haven't seen Black Cat. I feel like a fake fan.
No, this, listen, Soy Boys, because that's what we call the Black Hat fans. Because they manipulate Soy Futures in the movie. So the Soy Boys, call off, just hold, okay? No. He's waiting for the 4K, and truly...
I'll be among you soon.
And yeah, now, and now that that's actually what the 4K is going to be released, because they were just going to release the theatrical cut on 4K, now that that's going to be released, honestly, genuinely, for those who are upgrading to it on 4K, it's like one of the releases of the year, because literally the only way you've been able to get it is like back channels and a YouTube link, and it's a secret link through a back channel Twitter DM is the only way that you've been able to look at it. So yeah, that's okay.
Oh my God.
Soy Boys, call off the dogs. Okay.
So go back to the genesis. I guess we were talking about the genesis of this. Yeah.
I will say, it's not having seen Black Hat, you saying this is Tenet is Nolan's Black Hat. I'm just like, that sounds right.
Yeah, it's totally right.
Right. The thing where he like kind of like leans into his most like kind of like difficult, frustrating to some tendencies, and just has zero interest in like winning over the mass audience, despite the fact that Nolan was like, yes, I think Tenet will be the one that will save movie theaters and everyone will rally around, which I think is very, very funny. But so the way I finally saw Tenet for the first time, I bought the... you know, the 4K steelbook, having not seen the movie. And then I took a night where I, you know, turned off all the lights in my apartment and I turned my phone off and I put the movie on. I did my best to recreate a theater experience in my living room, and also had to really ride the volume buttons on the remote control so as to try to hear what people are saying, but also when things get loud, not have my neighbors like kick down my door and kill me. And so it worked. And it was a funny thing watching that, where like I knew that Tenet had, you know, frustrated a lot of people and had not received a like rapturous reception as like other Nolan movies had. But I remember vividly just like when, like during the car chase around the middle of the movie, as like Ludwig Göransson's score is like really going wild with these like just like, you know, like frantic looping synths and everything, and they're trying to get, I don't know, some piece of metal in some case, and I had this moment where I'm just like, I don't really know what's happening or what anyone is talking about, but I am into this right now. And this, and like, oh cool, that like that track of the score from earlier, it's coming back and it's going even faster now. I'm just like, and I was just feeling it, and I was just like, you know what, I think this is it. I'm like, I am dialed into this completely, and I get why other people will be driven insane by it. And then and this might have been January 2021, and then I have it here. I have a tweet from January 18th, 2021, so this is over 2 years ago, where I said, are there any movies other than Tenet and Miami Vice that fit into the category of, quote, auteur-driven blockbusters where the dialogue is often incomprehensible and you don't really know what's happening, but the vibes are so strong that you just go with it and have a great time? And so... That tweet was the genesis. That's why I'm here having this conversation with you today. And no one really gave me a good answer for like what are other movies quite like. I think the reason that these two movies locked together for me was specifically the image of the protagonist driving like speedboats across the water. Yes. Because yeah. there's a thing in Tenet, it doesn't last for as long, but there's the thing when John David Washington and Elizabeth Debicki are like at the like Amalfi Coast in Italy, and they're just driving out to the yacht in like perfect clothing in yeah. this speedboat. He's standing up while driving. She's just like lounging, arms out in the back.
And she's like, miraculously as tall as him lounging. Just she's the tallest, yes. most attractive woman going around.
Absolutely. I love that movie does not even attempt to hide that she is like, you know, a foot and a half taller than every right. man in the film. Right. And just watching these people ride in this boat in this awesome place, I immediately, like, my mind immediately jumps to Colin Farrell and Gong Li, you know, in the Go Fast boat in Miami Vice. And it all kind of crystallized right there, where I'm just yes. like, these movies where, and it's the thing is, like, I've seen both these movies enough times to, like, I know what happens in them. I can follow along with them. But on first viewings, I, you know, was like lost in a way where I didn't care that I was lost. I was mm-hmm. having yeah. fun with it. And right there, and then for 2 years, I just thought about those two movies together to be like, why do just really trying to interrogate like why I find these so compelling. And then, and I feel like Katie, as you said earlier, you know, I would think about these in comparison to other, you know, large scale movies that we get nowadays, and the, you know, the discussions about plot and all of that. And these are movies where, you know, there is a plot, but it's not really what's important about them. And I decided it was finally time to, you know, pull the trigger, make this video. Mm-hmm. And I will say what was very nice, as I was literally writing the video, then something literally that day, Chris McQuarrie decides to like go on a whole like Twitter essay about the irrelevance of plot and in relation to like also like the James Bond series. And I'm like, oh my God, this was the right time.
Yeah.
It's all happening right here. And I think that's why we're here.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
And just to clarify, you define vibes in your video as valiant individuals besting endangerment stylishly.
Yes.
Which I love.
To be clear, thank you. I love that too. I cannot take credit for that bit because the way, you know, we have like a team that works on these. And the way that goes is I had like written like my part of the essay, and I had the part where I, you know, I initially established the idea of like calling them vibes movies. And then Mike Curran, who is the way our videos work is like with the essays, I primarily write the essays, and then on a lot of them Siddhant Adlaka will like collaborate and be like a co-writer on the essays. And then we have two narrative writers, Jake Torpy and Mike Curran, who will write the scripts for like the framing narrative stuff or like the cutaways, and they'll also do like kind of punch up with jokes on the essays as well. And you know, we all have like a Google Doc that we share. And with that was Mike going through doing some punch up and then just like highlighted the word vibes and then like added a little comment on the side and was like, you should have an acronym appear on screen and it should be that. And then Siddhant saw that and was like, ooh, let me just, I think he swapped out whatever the S was with stylishly. And so that's how that came about. The vibes
true
acronym.
Collaboration.
Collaboration. I can take no credit for that, but I was, I mean, as soon as they threw that out, I was like, this is 100% going in the video. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, as you said, valiant individuals besting endangerment stylishly.
Yeah. And I like that you have a specific definition for like this very specific subgenre, which seems to just be two movies at this point.
I mean, it's also
Mission Impossible and Bond. It's sort of affiliated.
Well, it's a funny thing because I have, since making that video, have just received so many questions on like every platform. People can send me questions about like, what about this movie? Is this a vibes movie? I think this counts. Why didn't you talk about this movie? I think it has a lot of vibes. And so what I have done is I do for all of my regular videos, I have a little series on my second channel called Patrick Replies, where I just respond to like questions and comments like about the videos, which are usually stuff like people saying, why didn't you talk about this? And then I'm like, here's why I didn't cover that. And so I realized there were so many of those questions that I got for this about like just people naming movies, being like, what about this and this, that I have. And I think I'm going to probably publish this either today or tomorrow. So by the time this episode drops, it'll probably be out. I have just been writing up. And again, to be clear, this is not scientific. It's totally silly and like arbitrary and stuff I've made up. I've written up like a grading rubric for the vibes categories like a point system. So you can, so I'm just like, I want people to stop asking me about it. You can take this and yes. I'm making a nice graphic that can be shared. And you can go through and be like, oh, 1 point for each country the movie travels to.
Yeah.
The protagonist goes home at 1 point, subtract 3 points.
Yeah. yes.
So I've written up a thing that I just need to like make, like put into Photoshop and make look a bit prettier. And that will, then people can take that and apply it to any movie out there and tell me what the actual like top 10 highest scoring vibes movies are.
The vibes chart. We love it.
The first thing I was thinking about, Patrick, and when your video came out, and obviously like thinking, oh, great. You know, someone synthesized it. And I fully expect it because you got such a great engaged audience that are like, what about this? What about this? Like keen to actually interact with you, not in like a trolley way, but like, oh, what about this? I want to hear you talk about this, which is super fun. I was just like, it would almost be a shame if there wasn't a Vibes Film Festival at some point, like just programming that. And, you know, we've got some friends, Jason Fitzroy, I'm thinking about, who runs a film festival out of Miami. It's just like, you know, it's like, it seems like there's a vibes program in this, you know, but way more interested in the Patrick Willems like vibes segment of, you know, a film festival that I would be in most of, like, I don't want to see the horror thing. Like, the vibes would be like, great. The top of the rubric only.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's showing up dressed well to that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the cocktails after every screening will be outstanding. Outstanding. Yes. DJ dropping numb encore. Let's go.
I'm like, this is an American Cinematheque retrospective waiting to happen.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Come on. There's so much good stuff we can pull in and, you know, throw in like Jean-Pierre Melville movies and stuff like that.
All
like,
vibes.
You know, oh my God, this could be fun.
I just watched the American Cinematheque Mean Guns, the Albert Pyun film that I think there's an essay on when he made it.
Oh yeah, they've been doing a whole series about him there, right?
Yeah. So
I'm on the wrong coast.
I saw Nemesis and I just saw Mean Guns, and that's a vibe movie because girlfriend did not understand a single thing that was going on, except that I was like, Ice-T has put a bunch of assassins in this prison and they all have to kill each other. I have no idea what's happening, but they all look really cool. There's Mambo playing the entire time.
Oh my God.
And everyone's just killing each other. And I was just like,
Mambo on the rubric stat.
But these are not valiant individuals. Yeah, get Mambo on the rubric. These are villainous individuals vesting endangerment stylishly. So
I clearly have to see that movie.
Yeah, you got to see Mean Guns. Yeah, it's a total 1997 like Tarantino ripoff. Amazing.
Oh yeah, I'm looking it up now. It's got Christopher Lambert.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, he's the lead, and I think they shot it in 11 days, in like a prison in LA that was about to be opened, and Albert Pune's like, "Can I shoot something here?" So. There's so many great vibes movies from the like huge Tenant, you know, auteur-driven spectacle, just like Christopher Nolan being like completely inscrutable and not giving a fuck, to, you know, these really low budget, like direct to video things, but they all kind of have the same ethos.
Exactly.
Like, you don't have to know what's going on. You can just, and I was just rewatching Tenet this morning in advance of our conversation. And I, when I saw it, I also was like, what the hell? I have no idea what's going on here. And I was watching it just sort of in the background, and I was like, you know what? I'm kind of appreciate. I was like, I'm watching this as if this is a movie I do not speak the language of, but, and there's no subtitles,
right?
But my boy Hoyte van Hoytema like really did the best work, and the movie looks amazing, and the score is incredible, and like I was kind of appreciating just it from a aesthetic perspective more this time around.
Exactly. Look, I mean, I'm sure you guys feel the same way about Miami Vice, but you know, I love when people tell me like you know, I wasn't really into this originally, but you know, I'm watching it again. It's yeah. Like it's starting to like click a bit more for me.
It's almost better when someone, you know, puts in the time to start appreciating it rather than yeah. like getting it right away.
Right. I totally. I mean, speaking of that. I wasn't like against it, but I was not an immediate Miami Vice convert.
Yeah, me too, kind of.
I did not see Miami Vice in theaters. I remember being excited for the movie, and then I think it also okay, you guys would know. What was the American release date for Miami Vice?
It's like June 2006. Yeah, I don't remember the exact date.
It was a summer. It was folded into the summer release.
I mean, I know that. I mean, I'm trying to remember because Miami Vice came out, I think, within like a week or two of me graduating high school.
Yeah.
Because I graduated high school in June 2006. And so I'm like, I know it was out right around that time, and I think it was a thing where it got like a very mixed response, and then I was also tied up with like, you know, finals and graduating and stuff like that, and I was like, I'll probably see it, and I just didn't get to it in theaters. And then I remember like, you know, getting it you know, just like renting the DVD like when it right. came out. And so that's how I first saw it, and it was a thing where yeah, initially, I was like, I wasn't against it, but I was like, huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's because I'd been a big Collateral fan. Like I saw Collateral in theaters when I was like 15 or whatever, and was really into that and was excited. Like,
Katie's second favorite official. Michael Mann.
Yeah,
movie?
It's Heat. Obviously, yeah. Heat's number one. Collateral's number two for me.
Yeah, it's been a few years since I last watched Collateral, but I love it. I actually just rewatched The Insider last night.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
That is.
Yeah.
This is it. What I would say, and I know this is controversial. There are times when I watch The Insider where, while I'm watching it, it's my favorite Michael Mann movie. Like, and I know that. I fully understand if people are listening like, wait, you're the one Heat Minute guy? Yeah, I know. Okay. I know exactly who I am at this point. But when I watch that movie, I'm like, this is peerless stuff. And as a person who is also canonically obsessed with Alan Pakula's Paranoia trilogy of the 1970s, like, it is such a synthesis of all of my deepest interests. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I watched The Insider, and that movie is just out of control good. Out of control.
It's so good. It's also, I feel like more, especially recently, I've seen more and more talk about, because they don't really make many of these anymore, but people's love of, especially like the 90s was a peak time for this, the guys having meetings in rooms movies, and also yeah. people looking at documents movies.
I love documents movies.
Oh, yeah, God, huge fan of documents. Huge fan
when
of documents.
When they do, what's it called when they like drop off all the documents, the lawyers drop off all the documents, like discovery.
Right.
Yeah.
I love
it's
it.
The best.
And they're like getting up the boxes.
Fax machines.
I mean, the scene in The Insider when Pacino and Russell Crowe are sending the faxes back and forth, where it's like can't talk, won't talk. Like it's so good. But yeah, and The Insider is really like Michael Mann's one documents movie, and it's so good. And also because I hadn't watched it in like a decade, I was really I was like, is because the visual language of The Insider is so much looser than Heat is. Yeah. I was like, oh, this feels like a big step toward Miami Vice.
Huge.
Just visually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like in the last 10 minutes of Heat, one of the last shots that happens with Wayne Grove, and it's a kind of blink and you miss it shot when Neil McCauley like bursts into Wayne Grove's room and he grabs his face. It's a handheld video.
Yeah, isn't like the camera go like...
Like the camera like lurches forward. Yeah, Katie was just sort of like lurching forward.
Yep.
And it's handheld video in a movie that is this beautiful, resplendent 35. It jumps out at you just for a split second for the unease and the closeness and proximity and the grain. And it does it. And then it does the staging of the normal shot. And it's like, that was like this tiny little bit of seasoning. Aesthetic seasoning, I guess. And then The Insider takes another leap. And then Ali takes, like, uses that exact, that kind of lurching, immediate, hyperactive camera to define its style for all of the fight scenes and things like that. So then he's moving into digital and then he gets to Collateral and he's just, I will do anything. I'm just going to embrace the technology. He does that both back to back with Collateral and Vice. And so, yeah, it's really interesting to look at that. I definitely see The Insider as like a total nexus movie of like him being on the cusp of traditional storytelling and then wanting to lurch into this entire new storytelling mode, you know, stripping away all of those like narrative requirements, I guess, you know, for him.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad that's not just me, but yeah, that movie is so good. And, how did I even bring up The Insider again?
You were talking about not seeing Miami Vice at the time.
Right. Yeah, I was a little, it was also just the thing of just like watching it like in 2006. It is like, this movie doesn't look like any other movie.
Yes.
It was even a thing where like, I didn't think anything of it when I watched Collateral, like when that came out. But Miami, and I think it's just because it's a lot of like, okay, it's LA at night and it's a lot of just like, you know, like greenish fluorescent hues and that kind of thing. But Miami Vice, just like the grain on it is so wild. And like the depth of field and like the focus and shot is so, and the close-ups of people look so wild that it's just, it was a thing where I was just like, I don't even know how to process this or how I should feel about it. And, because I do remember, I've only ever seen Public Enemies once, and that was when it was in theaters. And that was, and I might feel totally different about it now, because I'm, you know, older and hopefully less dumb than I was back then. But that was the one movie that I recall being like, I'm not on board with the way this looks. This is not working for me. And I might feel different now.
Yeah.
It's kind of the crazy. Katie, you please go.
No, I was just going to say, like, I feel like it's almost like you can't really appreciate how beautiful Miami Vice is until it's like 10 years after the fact.
Yes. Right. So especially, Kate, you nailed it, Katie, when we were talking a while back about Black Hat came to Netflix internationally, finally got the rights, and it became number one in the US iTunes and then like number one in the Australian iTunes. I think it charted at like the top 10 for the first like 2 to 3 weeks that it came out. And I remember at the time people were like, wow, Black Hat. And I'm like, yes, because there had been a very specific narrative and aesthetic look of everything that is in your digital carousel that when you click on Black Hat and you go to Black Hat, you're like, what the hell is this? As in narratively, like you know, vibes, aesthetics, everything was so wild that you're like, oh my god, this is just something so completely different. And I think that that has been a huge part of the reemergence with Miami Vice. It's like, at the time, we were used to this glorious 35 millimeter. We were still getting a whole bunch of on location shooting, and people were like, no, I don't like this. The digital photography seems to be in some way jeopardizing the effort and the production value. And yet, when you go back to it now, especially when we're, you know, watching it now on beautiful Blu-ray or like 4K level stream or whatever the case may be, you see it and you're like, how did you not think the boat streaming like a white bullet, or as Jordan Harper, our favorite author and friend of the show, calls it, a sea penis, just flying through the water, is not one of the most beautiful goddamn shots of all time?
I know.
You know,
the
Moby
sea
playing.
Penis is beautiful.
It's a beautiful sea penis.
It's funny because that's a really good way of putting it. Yeah. It's, I mean, a thing I've just been thinking about more and more over the past like decade, it's a thing that I'm like kicking around doing a video about sometime this year, is just, because obviously digital cinematography has evolved so much over the past 20 or so years, and now like the, basically, digital has come to a point where it's like, it can, when, you know, when really talented people do it, it can come extremely close to looking like almost identical to film.
Yeah.
And, but even in general, almost all digital cinematography is like more or less trying to like approximate like how film has traditionally looked. And I've become more and more nostalgic for that era of like basically the 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, where you had like people like Miami Vice and like Danny Boyle's stuff with Anthony Dodd-Mantle, and where it was like digital was an aesthetic choice. It's like, we weren't just going to use digital and make it look the same as it would if it were shot on film. It's like, this is a deliberate choice to have a movie look extremely different than it would, because most things were shot on film. And it was like exciting back then. It was like, it was the thing where, you know, I remember like reading about like how they like shot Slumdog Millionaire, where it's like, oh, we stripped out all the stuff that has to go in a camera and put it in a backpack. And so it's just like a sensor and a lens that we're holding and running around with. And then the movie will, is going to be all like, you know, grain and yellow and stuff like that. And I was like, man, this is, and it, like, I was in college at the time. I'm like, this is so cool and exciting. Mm-hmm. And then that all went away because digital cameras just got really good. And it's like, oh, this is and now it's like, if you shot a thing on like, I don't know, like the Sony like F65 or whatever that they used back then. It's like, why would you do that? That's it wouldn't make any sense anymore.
The briefest time, it's like 99, and I chart it all the way to 2007. It's that digital photography, because it had not overtaken traditional photography yet, people were actually experimenting with it for the pure aesthetic value that it could produce. And then, you know, I've got the poster behind me, but it's like Fincher's Zodiac when he shot on the Vipers and he made it look like a 70s movie. Again, a huge aesthetic choice. He wanted to make it feel like you found it, the reel in some library in Paramount, and wheeled it out and just played it, and it had existed already. Like, that was his entire sort of ethos for making the film. And people were like, oh, we can make this look like cinema, like we can make it look like the way. And so there was that approximation. People were super influenced by that movie, even though it didn't have a big, you know, footprint as far as like money or fandom at the time, and has now since grown. But I put the pin in it in 2007, because it's just like that period there, you actually had people using it and for its most exciting and versatile ways. And it wasn't wedded to like, we have to look like movies yet. This is that purple patch. And I'm sure in that period, you could find so many rad movies that were just like, we're going to do it because we're trying something different. We want it to look very distinct from, I guess, the glut of everything else at the time. And now it is the glut. And you're like, oh, God.
This is a weird movie to bring up in this conversation, I guess. But I always think of Pieces of April. You know that movie with Katie Holmes where it's like a Thanksgiving movie from
I never
2003.
Saw it.
It's like not, it's fine. It's, but it's this like tiny.
No one has talked about Pieces of April since 2003. Katie.
It rattles around in my head for some reason, because like I always have to write these streaming guides that are like Thanksgiving movies, and it's like one of 10 Thanksgiving movies. But It's so pixely and digitally, and like it's an indie film, but it's, for some reason, it's something that I always think about when I think about this like digital era of like people being like, you know, talking about digital cinematography and how absolutely shitty it looks, but like it kind of works for that movie because she plays this like sort of down and out, like punkish girl who's like going home for this horrible Thanksgiving, and it feels like a family home movie or something. But yeah, and then I think like 2007, 2008, like the Red camera started becoming more available, and it just looked so realistic and clear and crisp in this way. And everyone was like,
that's
oh,
when
we have to
Soderbergh
shoot on the
really
red.
Jumped on it and was like all red all the time.
Yeah, and it looks great, but it doesn't have that quality of, you know, we've talked to Elliot Kretz, who we mentioned before, the sound designer, who like talks about the way that like digital expands the night scene so much, the depth of field and what you can see in the night scene so much more, that it affects the sound design because he has to put in all these different sounds of the world that we can see.
Because you can see everything. You can see traffic that's like a kilometer away. And so then the layering of the sound has to do that. And when he told us that, we were just like,
yeah, mind blown.
Never even imagined that it unlocks that sphere of work as well, making it all the more important that you can hear these little notes, even if it's just a flavor, because otherwise if you don't address it, it doesn't work. Like there's something grating about it. So like again, Michael Mann's the kind of filmmaker that thinks about that shit. So that's what's fascinating.
Yeah. Anyway, Pieces of April. Reminding everyone that it exists.
Wow. Well, hey, look, if at some point I do this video on like early days of digital cinematography, I promise you, Pieces of April is getting
better. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Oh my God, that's heroic, heroic work. I do just want to say also, you know, you got to be your own, you know, you got to be your own vibey protagonist going all the way to Bollywood. And I just want to say, because I know I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but I just want to say, like, it was also great to watch you do this, Patrick, which is to be the guy who like immerses yourself in a cinema in the country. And so if you are going to do, I'm really hoping for your kind of like Werner Herzog, Fitzcarraldo, you know, like a style where you drag your entire team over a mountain or something like that. Like, I'm like, what is he going to do next? Where's he going to go? Like, is he going to go into the depths of the snow for the next? I'm like imagining all these videos where your team throw you into something. So please keep doing that. Cause not only was the insights great, it was just wonderful watching you trying to figure out cricket. Amazing stuff.
Thank you so much. It's, I'm genuinely really proud of that video. It's a thing. I mean, it's been funny since the video came out, and so many people, especially people from India, have been like, "That was great. Now do more videos, but about all these other industries in India and stuff like that." And then also just people being like, "Oh, I'd love to see you do stuff in like Brazil or Mexico or you know like Japan and stuff like that." And I'm like, "I would love to do all of these things. I would love to have a show where I go to these places and immerse myself and like learn more about their cinema." I mean, the India one's kind of perfect because I'm like, I've seen basically nothing where it's like, I mean, I've seen like, you know, Japanese movies and, you know, Mexican movies and stuff like that. But I don't have to go in like totally blind again. The one thing is just that we spent so long like planning that video, and it also was like more expensive than my videos usually are. I did have to fly like two of us over to
live in India for like 3 weeks or whatever.
I will say one thing about India is, at least once you're there, it's the, like the general cost of living is way cheaper than the US. It's like, oh man, like delicious food for so much less than it is in the US. Like a taxi costs like $1. Lovely. But that's, I mean, it was still like, you know way more expensive than my videos usually are. And I'm just like, I would love to do this again. I don't know when I can afford to do it again.
You have to do like a couple more years of videos and save up the money.
So I'm just like, man, we gotta find a way to like get more like people on the Patreon or whatever to get our budget stuff. Because I would love to do this again in like sooner than 2 years from now.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's really fun. You know, as much as playing cricket was really frustrating and embarrassing and hard. I'm glad I did it, and I would really love to do more stuff like this. And yeah. Then you know, and ideal like I would be great, like, you know, next time to bring like more of the team and more of the crew. It was funny with this because Siddhant also ended up being like the camera operator for a lot of stuff, and so like we have. The first shot in India in the video, it just like it hard cuts to like me in like this like kind of tracking shot with me in this rickshaw like driving along the street, where it's like we had the coordination just for that shot where it's like, okay, so he has to be in this other car riding alongside, and I don't speak the language that the rickshaw driver does, and so he has to speak to him and coordinate like how to do this shot like all together, and I'm just like and we did it, we pulled it off, and I'm just like, man, if we could like have an extra camera operator next time. That
yes.
would be great.
Yes.
So anyway,
you're doing your own Tenant backwards car chase. Siddhant is Hoyta. You're John David. I mean,
I will say it's not in the video, but we did go to just for fun, go to the spots in Mumbai where they shot Tenant.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. I have a photo of me going like this in front of like, this is the place where John David Washington takes a phone call. In one scene. And then I have like a photo of me like pointing to like the skyscraper that they like bungee jump up.
Oh, yeah. Funny. Oh, great.
So that was fun for me. I couldn't find a way to like tie it into the video.
Well, you've just got a little bonus video for your patrons to being like, yeah. You know, to be like, look, guys, here I am doing the Tenet World right. Tour.
Exactly.
Next up, Estonia.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go to Estonia and then
then
everyone
just slide over to the Amalfi Coast just for a cheeky
everyone,
couple days.
Join my Patreon so I can afford to go to the Amalfi Coast and drive a speedboat around and I'll film it so it'll be a tax write-off.
Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Wait, I have one more question pertaining to vibes and missions. How is Mission Impossible going?
Yeah, that's a great question, Katie.
to the premiere.
That when does this episode drop?
This episode will drop in about a week and a half, so like 10th of June.
Okay. Then. Okay. So far have not received an invite.
Okay.
I have not officially heard from Paramount yet. I have heard secondhand that people involved in the movie are aware of it.
Okay.
And
good.
So it's like gotten to, you know, like, you know, if nothing else, it's gotten down the chain a little bit. And
yeah.
So we'll see. It's,
And this is where I want to launch my campaign, Kate Rari, which is just Katie Walsh being flown to Venice Film Festival, to the premiere of Ferrari, to talk to Michael Mann on the red carpet. So, ladies and gentlemen, there'll be a hashtag Kate Rari, and that's what I want.
This is the first I'm hearing of.
I just came up with it because Mission Impossible.
Kate Rari, get it trending.
Kate Rari,
get it trending. But 110%, I wish that for you. Like if there's one movie I've been looking forward to other than Ferrari this year, it's Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning. I'm so excited for you if you get to go see it. It's amazing. I can't wait to see it.
Where is the world premiere? Do we know where the world premiere of Mission Impossible is? In Rome. Oh my God.
Yep.
Why is it in Rome?
Because one of the major set pieces.
Yeah, they shot a massive set piece in there.
You've seen the trailer, I assume.
I don't really watch trailers.
Okay.
So I haven't seen the most recent one.
Have you seen the teaser trailer?
Yes, I have seen the teaser, yeah.
So the car chase with Tom Cruise and Hayley Atwell in the little yellow Fiat, that's Rome.
Okay.
It's all in Rome.
Yeah. And I that's usually what they do for these each of the mission movies. It's like a city that with a major set piece, that's where the world premiere is.
And can I say this? there is also a big Australian premiere where Macquarie and Tom Cruise are coming to Sydney. And this is a latent benefit. If anyone said that Mission Impossible 2 isn't good, the fact that this was a Mission City means that we are getting a premiere as well.
Hey.
And I have said to one of my friends who works for Paramount in Australia, I said, I will jump out of a plane. I'll get hit by a car. I'll ride a motorbike without a helmet. I will do anything. I will fight a huge stuntman. I'll do anything to
Will you have a knife screen. Go super close to your eye?
Super close to the eye. You can lower me into a huge smokestack kind of tunnel. I'll do anything to be a part of this. So I'll have John Paulson yell at me from a helicopter with a really overly awkward Australian accent. I'm in. I'm ready.
All right, Mission in Blake Possible.
That's it.
No, I'm not stealing it. It's Kate Rari. That's what's happening. That's what's happening.
I mean, guys, the way that I look at this, and this is my thinking behind like starting the Mission Impossible thing, is I'm like, look, you know, we make stuff and we have audiences for the stuff that we make, and you got to be selective about when you kind of like you make your ask and put something out there and
yes,
be like,
yes,
like
that has to
I
count.
Would like exactly, I like this is the one time I'm gonna like mobilize my audience. Yeah. Or a thing that I care about.
You're not going to do it every time.
No.
It has to be selective.
And these are the important ones.
Yeah.
Go into See Ferrari at the Venice Film Festival. Go into the Mission Impossible premiere. Blake, I mean, you've kind of got the most attainable one because it's like staying in your home country.
Oh, no. I'm not even counting it. I'm like, I'll stay here. But also, if they're like, no, you can't come to the premiere or no, you can't talk to Macquarie or whatever, I'll just be like, guys, on opening day, I'll be at Dead Reckoning. It doesn't matter. Like,
right.
If I don't get to go, this is where I've come to in my life in this whole thing. I'm like, I'm usually watching a movie from 2006. And what are you going to do? Cake me off your press list? You can't cancel me. It's over. Like, it's done. I don't care. I got the Swen cut, baby. We're good. Like, it's fine. Like, it doesn't bother me. But seeing big movies or great movies on the big screen with a really rabid audience, especially punters, often less so than media, sometimes, I'm like way more into that. I'm like, I will go, even if I do go to a press screening, if I really enjoy it, I'm going opening night because I want to see it with the crowd, with the frothy, crazy punters who just can't wait to see it. And so, I'm going to be there. So I'm not counting that. My big one would be, you know, like, and it'll come to this. It's like, if Heat 2 goes into production, I not only, and this is me perhaps selfishly, but like I want to be on set. I want to go like the boys, our beautiful boys, Drew and Charles went to the Mission Impossible set. I want to go to Heat 2 and I would love to see the premiere of Heat like 2. That'll be a future goal. Because
that's where you're going to save up your juju
that's,
for.
I'm saving all the good juju for then, you know? And then like, it's like, Katie will learn that she's like, the couch that's in that room behind her is going to have a Blake on it for like a month.
I have a guest room. You can have her own bed.
Oh, wow. So exciting times. But, you know, so that then I will push for something like that at the time. So be extremely selective. But, you know, missions that kind of one.
We're pulling for you, Patrick.
I appreciate it.
and any one of Patrick's fans, you're going to see the hashtag Kate Rari. Let's pull for Katie to get to Venice. Two Italy trips, baby. Let's get Pat to Rome and let's get Katie to
Everyone's
Venice.
Going to Italy.
Let's go to Italy.
That's it. It'll be great. Man, the Venice Film Festival sounds so cool.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I know.
Are you going anyway?
No, I never go to the international festivals, but... I can look from afar.
There's one film festival. I just want to tell you guys, and I accidentally stumbled into it in my honeymoon. My wife still to this day thinks that I planned it, but the San Sebastian Film Festival.
Oh yeah, I've heard that one's great.
In Spain is the most beautiful. Like if I ever had that, you know, like that kind of like lottery amount of money or that. In the parlance of YouTube, that Mr. Beast kind of like rent a private plane and get people to somewhere kind of cash. I would get all of my friends to go to that festival and just stay in San Sebastian. Less important about the films, but just the town. It is the most beautiful town in the world. And so Venice too, absolutely stunning and gorgeous and full of history and all that sort of stuff. And it would be absolutely crazy chaotic to have the film festival there, I would imagine. But yeah, I'm, absolutely amazing. That,
see, we're fantasizing about our own vibes life. Yeah. Valiant, individuals.
I want to be in a boat.
Celebrating cinema stylishly.
Yeah.
We need glamour, spectacle, suits. What were the other?
I'll try to send a mess. I was in a Mr. Beast video once, and so I'll try to send out a. I'll try to.
Sponsor us, please.
He's in the movie I made. He did a cameo. Wow. And so, I'll try to get a message to him to be like, hey, fund this video, and just get us in it.
Try to
win over the like 30 something cinephile crowd.
Yeah.
And there's
12 of us. Our reach is not quite like yours, but you know, just
doesn't matter.
We're enthusiastic is all that matters. Listen,
exactly.
We'll be fun. It'd be a fun day. It'd be a fun time.
Look, we just want to wear suits in cool places.
Yeah,
and watch movies.
And a speedboat.
Get in a boat. Yes.
And we want to be sponsored by Linen, just like Miami Vice 2006.
Seriously.
Oh my God, what fun.
Patrick, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for your continuing amazing video essay work. It's such an invaluable resource and just it's fantastic. And I guess as a person who's been watching you over the years, like I was really incredibly happy for you that you're like, I feel like you've been doing a service because you take big topics seriously and you make the videos fun and all that sort of stuff. But seeing you do the Bollywood one, that was like me watching you go to a whole, like other than the vibes, because obviously the vibes, it was like, you're speaking our language. You know, you see people sometimes when you're lying, you're like, we're going to be friends. It was like Katie, when I read her first review, I'm like, oh, we're going to be friends. I like her. She's good. Right. And so I saw you. I was like, I always watched you. I was like, admired your work. But that time I was like, you are taking it to a whole new level. So whatever that brings you, I hope it's amazing and a Mission Impassable. And this has just been such a fun chat. So thank you for taking the time to do it with us.
Hey, seriously, thank you so much for having me on. This has been a blast. So good to finally meet both of you.
Yes.
and hang out here. And look, I think we're gonna get Kate Rari trending.
Kate Rari.
I think I believe in this. I think this can happen.
That's so sweet.
If a photo of you on a red carpet in Venice, Katie, I'm going to spontaneously
have to
combust.
Start shopping for clothes.
I know.
Suits. Well, this
I'm saying bring
so
back
much...
the 2006 Katie denim days, you know, like the Colin Farrell making Miami Vice days.
My giant belts, just the heaviest belts known to man.
Yes.
Covered in studs. This has been so much fun. Patrick, do you want to like tell people where to find you or anything?
I mean, the simplest thing we've been making a lot of references to videos that I make, and you can watch them at youtube.com/Patrick H. Willems. They're also, you can see them on the platform Nebula with no ads and extended cuts of all the videos this season. And that's the important stuff.
And look, guys, on oneheatminute.com, so you'll obviously get, you might be hearing this in whatever podcast app that you listen to, but if you go to oneheatminute.com where we have posts about every one of our episodes, the embed for the Tenet and a Celebration of Vibes movies, which is what started this conversation, will be in that post so that it can link off, and then you can subscribe to Patrick's channels. Incredible stuff all around. But yeah, look, thank you so much for being a part of the show. Thanks for being part of our Michael Mann horny campfire and talking vibes with us and creating new campaigns. And it's been an absolute treat talking to you. Thank you so much.
Of course. My pleasure.
When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing.
Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context, plus tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.